Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, have a very exciting and interesting pair of topics to hit with someone who covers both of these topics for ESPN. Later on, we're going to talk about the Minnesota Vikings having a fascinating offseason, some ways good, maybe some ways bad, and their trade up, what it means for the rest of the league and the quarterback class, or not the quarterback class potentially. But first, talking about the proposals sent to the NFL, which involve officiating in terms of the hip drop tackle, but we're going to be focusing on the potential changes to the NFL kickoff. Joining me to talk about that, again, the person who covers the stuff for us at ESPN and does an extremely good job of doing so, it is Kevin Seifert. Kevin, how are you?
I'm very good, Bill. Thanks for having me here.
I feel like the fates sort of came together for us to do this show. I wanted to have someone on to talk about the Vikings because I feel like they're sort of the team stirring the drink right now post Justin Fields in terms of what might happen after the top three, what might happen in the top three, I guess. But then today we get the league's various proposals that'll be sent out for a vote on different topics to change the rules of the NFL, and you cover that for us at ESPN. And so here we are, and here is our opportunity to discuss the changes or potential changes that have to be voted on to the league's kickoff rules. And so, Kevin, let's start with the general changes that are being proposed. Can you lay out what the NFL is proposing to do to the kickoff that would look different?
Yeah, so the NFL the NFL's competition committee is proposing to model the new kickoff after what the XFL did in 2020 and 2023. And the basic philosophy of the XFL's kickoff, which the NFL is being very careful to not reference in their branding, but the basic philosophical change there was that instead of having everybody running down the field to cover and block a potential return, they are going to start the play with those players already downfield. And the idea is that it would reduce or even eliminate the high-speed collisions that make the kickoff the play in all of football that by far has the highest rate of concussions per play. And so it's a little bit different from what the XFL did, but what the NFL's competition committee is proposing is that the 10 members, everybody but the kicker, would line up on the receiving team's 40-yard line. The kicker would still be kicking from their 35, but they would all line up at the 40, and then the at least 9 members and possibly 10 of the return team would then line up 5 yards away between the 35 and the 30. And none of those people could move until the ball either touches the returner, who is lined up in what's called, the landing zone from the 20-yard line in, either touches him or touches the ground. And only at that point could everybody start moving, and whether it's blocking or covering and that sort of thing. And the XFL, what it turned into was almost kind of like a running play. Like you would have the returner catch the ball, and then everybody would start moving and he would just kind of follow the blocks. And so much less dangerous than the current version of the NFL kickoff. A little funky, a little bit tough to get used to when you first see it, but probably almost certainly preferable to either no kickoff or having the version that the NFL had last year that basically had only like 2 out of every 10 kickoffs getting returned.
Yeah, it certainly seems like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like the NFL is trying to find a solution to keep the kickoff in play while also trying to reduce incidences of head trauma.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. You put it much more succinctly than I did, but that is exactly what they're trying to do.
And from the perspective of the NFL, you very, very funnily pointed out that they have not mentioned the XFL or the XFL processes in terms of describing what this kickoff might be modeled after. And it's interesting because, of course, the XFL had this model several years ago. The NFL did not adopt it then. even it felt like earlier this offseason there wasn't a huge appetite for the NFL to maybe consider this change. What's happened? What sort of change to make the NFL more open to exploring this specific kind of kickoff model?
Well, to be clear, there's always been a lot of interest from the people who are invested in it, the special teams coaches, the competition mm-hmm. committee, the health and safety people. What is not clear even still is whether the owners will buy into it. And that is always what the hang up on any rule proposal is a group of owners, many of whom have been around, for multiple, their families have owned teams for multiple generations. Will they buy into something as fundamentally different from what they're doing, they have been doing, into moving forward? And so that part I'm still not clear about, but I think there was absolutely a high level of motivation to try to find a way to not just keep it kickoffs in the game, but to actually have a play where it gets returned most of the time. I should have said, in the XFL, this resulted in over 90% of kickoffs being returned. And I think the number was 20% last year. I can't think of a year in that it was ever real, even in the salad days of returns when they didn't care about concussions on kickoff returns. I think it was still only like 60%. And so this would be a huge change, I think, for the better, to have a play where there's actually action on it on the vast majority of them, as opposed to only on some or maybe even a little over half. And so I think there was a high level of motivation by the people involved to get to that point. But we'll see whether the league as a whole, i.e. the owners, will buy into that, or whether they will look at it. And the reason that they're not really referencing the XFL, I don't think it's to like hide where they got the idea from, but it's more to avoid the association that I think anybody who watched an XFL game had the first time they saw this return, and they saw everybody standing still while the ball was in the air and while the returner was moving to receive the kick, and just thought this was just really funky and hard to accept as a football play. And so I think they're trying to just avoid that association, but it's a very smart and reasonable idea when the bottom line goal is to have a kickoff return play where there actually are returns most of the time.
So you brought up special teams coaches, and that's something interesting I really wanted to ask you about, is from their perspective, with the kickoff having been marginalized, with the league having moved towards a system where certainly it feels like there's like you said, more touchbacks than there have been, do you sense that there's an appetite from special teams coaches for this sort of new play? Like, do you feel like it's getting their creative juices flowing? Do you feel like there's, a desire to try and draw up some unique stuff? Do you think it will create more of a investment from ownership down in special teams and make return men perhaps more valuable if this change does happen?
I think potentially. I think, first of all, it was just kind of a matter of survival on the special teams coaches. They, to be clear, they were pulled into this discussion. The competition committee met with a group of special teams coaches. Darren Rizzi, who was with the Dolphins for a long time and I think is now in New Orleans, was on the Pat McAfee show today. And he was very, very involved in that and is very much for it, because they want special teams they're sort of on the front lines of the battlefield, that special teams is just as important as offense and defense, and don't want to see anything happen that would potentially minimize it, which was already happening last year when, I think it was 70%+ of kickoffs were going for touchbacks, and they didn't like that either. They didn't want to be in a world where a key part of their jobs and their livelihoods and their passion is being minimized by rules because they don't know how else to prevent concussions. And so I think they very much welcome this, especially given the alternative, which is, I think after the way things went last year, really the only other alternative was just to bag kickoffs altogether and just start the play at, start possessions at the 25-yard line. So whether this leads to an increase in value for kickoff returners, I think that's probably down the line. But the first step is just survival. And I think that's what they were focused on. And I think that's where they see this having its biggest effect, frankly.
Yeah. And it does feel like there's a interesting sort of opportunity, right? Like if you're a team who felt like this was going to get approved, maybe you invested more this past off season in special teams, thinking, okay, there's going to be more returns. We're going to need those players more often than we did in years past. Given that you've been covering this now for years now for ESPN, and you've certainly talked to plenty of people in the league, outside the league, about these options, do you feel like there's any sort of plan B if this doesn't work out? Like, is there any sort of solution you've heard or you've seen brought up or pursued that you feel like NFL owners would be amenable to if the XFL model does not pass vote this year?
I wonder if it's this or bust. You know, part of the proposal is it would just be for 1 year, which is the same thing as last year's rule change to make the fair catch go to the 25, which sort of precipitated the whole increase in touchbacks last year. And sometimes what you'll see is if there's any kind of pushback or any kind of doubt, they just, you know, the next week in Orlando is where the annual league meetings are, and they would have that discussion. If they find any kind of doubt or pushback, they might potentially just table it and twist some arms for a few more weeks or months and get it and try to get it approved in their spring meeting, which I believe is in Nashville towards the end of May. And so I think that given the amount of work that's gone into this, and given the amount of buy-in they've gotten from special teams coaches, and given the fact that it's only a 1 year length before owners would have to reapprove it next year or make it permanent, I have a feeling that the competition committee, the commissioner, who's also very much behind this and has been leading the public charge and saying, like, we can't have another year at kickoff like we had last year. I guess if it comes to gets to the point where they just cannot find 24 owners to approve this, and there's just that much pushback, maybe there wouldn't be any kickoff next year. I don't know that. I don't think that they want to do what they did last year, and they've already sort of boxed themselves into a health and safety corner. If they were to go back to the way they did things 3 or 4 years ago, there would just be a big rise in concussions. And so they don't want that either. So my guess is that they're all in on this proposal. If they can't get enough interest in 24 votes next week, then they might just push it into May and just really keep grinding on it and addressing any concerns and hoping that owners will give them at least 1 year to see how this works.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jet's Pizza location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I look at it and it just feels like every other or every major change the NFL has made has been to reduce the play itself. And it's one of those things where I think it's really cool that we found, or that we, Sam Schwartzstein, who was with the XFL at the time and now with Amazon, was one of the people who came up with this, that another league found a solution that is viable. I think it speaks to the value of having, you know, leagues outside the NFL who can be a little more creative and try out different solutions. But I really can't think of another way to do it. And if it were just me, I'd say, okay, well, I'd be willing to listen to other people, but it doesn't feel like there's a lot of traction for another solution. So at the very least, I'm hoping to see this play out for a year. I'm hoping to see it pass and see if it does lead to, you know, a sustainable or more sustainable solution for kickoffs, because there is, I think, an appetite for, from fans at least, for some kind of kickoff play to stay in the game. And ideally, that would involve something that looks vaguely like the modern kickoff. And this seems like maybe a good balance between the old kickoff and what a kickoff could look like in the future. Something else, though, that came up in this discussion, and maybe less likely to be passed or maybe a little more extreme, but something I'm a fan of, so selfishly, as it is my show, I'm going to bring it up. I want to know what you think about it. The Eagles' proposal to have the onside kick, and we have, I think there's a couple of potential onside kick changes that were brought up as possibilities, but the Eagles' model being a 4th and 20 from the 20-yard line, so you can, instead of kicking, basically run an offensive play where you would get the ball on a 4th and 20, you have one play to pick up 20 yards as opposed to a onside kick, which of course again creates the possibility, the kickoff, the onside kick of head trauma. Any chance that you think this, something like this is passed, or any chance you think there are changes to the onside kick rules during this cycle?
Well, the interesting thing, I should have noted this in earlier, is that if they were to adopt the sort of XFL hybrid version kickoff, they would still have the option to do a traditional onside kick. You would have to announce it to the officials and say, we're going to do an onside kick here. And then they could line up in the traditional way and do a regular onside kick. It would eliminate the surprise onside kick, which happens a couple times a year. And this, you know, those are fun, but maybe not worth preserving with all the other changes. And as far as the Eagles proposal, I mean, this has been proposed in various ways. There's 4th and 13, 4th and 15, different yard lines. And the general complaint from owners has been that they just think it's gimmicky. They just think, and we can debate whether it really is, or whether it becomes less gimmicky the more consecutive years it's proposed and you hear about it and you realize it's not the end of the world. If they were to include this, it would be interesting to see if they packed this on top of a revamp of the kickoff and said, we're going to have this XFL kickoff. If you want to do an onside kick, you can either line up to do the onside kick or you can line up to do 4th and 20. And so that the fact that the competition committee didn't offer that option XFL hybrid proposal makes me think that this Eagles suggestion proposal is not likely to get passed, and it would just it's going to get lost in the shuffle once again. I guess stranger things have happened, but I think if the competition committee had bought into it and said, you know, we'll add that option to the onside kick within our new kickoff proposal, it would have a better chance to pass. And maybe that'll happen. Maybe they'll get down to the nitty gritty when they get to Orlando, and somebody will propose that and say, I'll vote for it if you do that. And maybe that'll be a way to get enough votes. I don't know, but my guess is, because it wasn't included in the competition committee's portion, that it's less likely to get approved.
Mm-hmm. I can hear Lions fans nervously facing the idea of having to report to the official that you're attempting something and yeah. seeing how that could go poorly for them.
Just have one kicker report, not three.
I do like that idea of trick kickers. And actually, I wonder, you know, you mentioned the possibility with the returns on the, if they do approve the new kickoff rules, of having either one or two potential players back for the kickoff. What do you think teams would choose?
It could vary. It's possible that somebody will think like that second returner would be a good blocker. It would be nice to have somebody escorting you in the same way you have an old school fullback escorting the tailback on a running play. But they may prefer a blocking scheme that, you know, sees more value in having that second returner up with the rest of the group to account for the 10 people who are lined up at the 40. Now, as far as like would you want to have the potential of who knows who's going to return it, or you know, or is there going to be some kind of trick? You know, the very first kickoff return for a touchdown in the XFL, I'm almost positive, I can see it in my mind, was like on a reverse. So whoever initially fielded it went in one direction, and somebody else was came back to him, and he handed it to him, and that guy went up the sideline for a touchdown. So it just gets your creative juices flowing in terms of how can you create more space? How can you get somebody with a running head start when you've got basically 20 people all lined up in front of each other trying to block? And so that could potentially be a reason to have a second returner in that 20 yard landing area. I would imagine most teams will just have one.
I'm hoping for laterals. That's always my dream, is we're going to get some elaborate Music City Miracle style laterals play, but a lot of possibilities that we can look forward to maybe if this gets approved. Okay, so we talked about, I mentioned the Lions very briefly, and I want to talk to you about the Minnesota Vikings, the team you cover for us at ESPN. It really feels like they're having a very interesting offseason. Every time they make a move, it's not that I don't like the move, I'm trying to sort of get the bigger picture of what they're thinking and doing and how that evolves, frankly, over the course of the offseason in my head. And so I wanted to have you on because you cover this team closely. You are our NFC North blogger. You've covered the Vikings now as the specific beat writer for a few years. I mean, you are an authority on the Minnesota Vikings and how they approach things. So let's start. If we're going to go to the offseason, obviously everything changed for the Vikings when Kirk Cousins left for the Atlanta Falcons. So let's get back to that time period, the days before the legal tampering period. Lots of talk about the Vikings maybe signing Kirk Cousins, maybe letting him move on. From your perspective, what do you think the Vikings were feeling heading into sort of the final days of that negotiation? And are you surprised that they did not find a way to get a deal done with Kirk Cousins in the big picture?
I think by those last few days before the negotiating window opened, they knew it was very likely to be over, because they had drawn a line. So if you step back and go to the beginning of the offseason, I thought there was a decent chance that there would be an agreement, because both of them, both the Vikings and Kirk Cousins, had genuinely affirmed that they wanted to do a deal, that Kirk wanted to finish his career in Minnesota and the Vikings wanted him to continue playing quarterback for him. And when you have that level of agreement, you're like halfway there already in most cases. But they ended up having very different ideas of what that would look like. And I thought that given where the Vikings were in the draft and given the fact that both their general manager and their head coach are entering the third year of their tenure, that they would not be eager to take a step back, even in the short term, at the position. So I really thought that in the end, the Vikings would do what Kirk Cousins needed them to do. Kevin O'Connell, especially the head coach, was in public saying to anyone who would listen, you know, I really want him back. I really hope we can figure this out. I really, you know, think that he's on his way to having a great last few years of his career, and I want it to be with us. And he could not have been more affirmatively vocal about that. But Kirk wanted to see the commitment that if he was going to commit to the Vikings to play for the rest of his career, he wanted the Vikings to commit to him. And his language is guaranteed money. And so he wanted at least 2 and maybe 3 years of guaranteed salaries to affirm the Vikings' commitment and him finishing the career. And I think that he was a little caught off guard by the Vikings' refusal to do that. The Vikings would not get fully guaranteed more than one full year, a little bit of a second, but not the whole part. And so once that became clear, once the Vikings made clear they were going to draw that line, the only way that he was going to be coming back was if there was no interest anywhere else and he had to go take whatever the Vikings would offer him. But as soon as it became clear that the Falcons were going to be significantly into trying to get him, and that became clear really at the combine, full week before the free agency period began, then I think everyone realized where it was going. I think the Vikings realized that Kirk was not going to come to them for less guaranteed money than what somebody else was willing to offer. And everybody felt pretty assured, both publicly and privately, that the Falcons were going to come up with that. So I wasn't surprised. I don't think the Vikings were surprised when the decision was finally announced. Mm-hmm. But if you had asked them a few months ago, if you would have been surprised by that outcome, potentially they would have been, and I would have been too.
Do you think there was some, like, outside of the injury, do you think there was something at some point that kind of soured them or maybe led them to be more aggressive in considering the alternatives?
I think that, you know, their general manager is Kwesi Adofo-Mensa. He's the first general manager in the NFL to come up through, the analytics vertical of an organization. Mm-hmm. He's a former derivatives trader on Wall Street, thinks about things in a very, like, I don't want to say cold, because he's not a cold person, but thinks about things, in terms of what's more probable. And when you ask yourself, what's more probable? That Kirk Cousins is going to play his best football of his life in his football seasons of 36, age 36 through 38, mm-hmm. or is he not? And so I think that they looked at that, and I think they looked at the return on investment of his previous 6 years with them, and as much money as they paid and as good of individual stats as he had put up. Other than the one season where they go 13-4 with some crazy last second outcomes, increasing their victory total, they were basically 500 with him. Wasn't his fault necessarily each time, but that's a pretty big sample size of his impact or lack thereof on their winning percentage. And so I think when they took all those factors together, they said, we're going to have to move on at some point. He's not going to play forever. It's probably better to move on a year or two too early than a year or two too late. And, giving 90 to 100 million in full guarantees to a 36-year-old quarterback probably didn't fit his and their idea of smart team building. And so we'll be able to look back in a few years and see. I think that they do this with their eyes wide open, knowing that whoever replaces Kirk in at least in 2024 is unlikely to outperform the way Kirk plays in Atlanta in 2024, but they were going to have to do this at some point. And I think they looked at this moment in time as good as any, in part because of the 2024 draft class, but also just given where their assessment of Kirk is in his career.
Now you're 100% correct about the likelihood of, Kirk Cousins being playing his best football at 36 and 37. And it's not you making this decision. I don't want to challenge you on this, but the one thing I would say if I was playing devil's advocate, or maybe if I was Kirk Cousins' agent, is Kirk Cousins might have been playing the best football of his career at age 35 before he tore his Achilles. No?
And that was certainly what Kevin O'Connell had argued, that, that it was mm-hmm. such a bummer. The timing of his injury was such a bummer, given how he played in those few games leading up to it, most notably the San Francisco Monday night game, where they really took mm-hmm. it to the 49ers that night. And then he played very well the following week in Green Bay and had them and got them in position to win before he was hurt. I guess the comeback there would be, there's actually been a fair, Kirk's nickname has sometimes been Kirktober, because he's he's just great in October for some reason. Yes. And I'm not going to say the timing of it, but the point is that he's had some extremely high level streaks in his career in Minnesota and in Washington too. And those are all kind of baked in to the overall performance. And, mm-hmm. I think that it's a bummer even for us on the outside that we didn't get a chance to test that theory over time. Mm-hmm. Kevin O'Connell came in the beginning of 2022. Kirk was very open in saying it was taking some time for him to adjust to the offense. When he came back for year two in that offense in 2023. He couldn't hold back how excited he was to hit the ground running and see what they could do with all these weapons and with the familiarity. And by the time they got to that midpoint at the end of October, they were humming. And mm-hmm. and would that have continued for the rest of the year? Would they have challenged the Lions for the division based on how they were playing in the middle of October if they had sustained that? We will never know, and that's a bummer mm-hmm. for us to not be able to test that theory. But I think there's probably a few points in Kirk's career where you could say he was playing at that level and either fell off or the season just ended or what mm-hmm. have you. And I don't think it was enough to – a two or three game sample size was enough to sway the overall analysis.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a fair argument in response. Now, Kirk leaves. Okay, he's gone. He's out the door. The Vikings have changes to make. We're going to talk about some of the additions they made on defense and maybe where they spent the majority of their money this offseason. But the replacement they have at quarterback is Sam Darnold, who signs a one-year deal worth about $10 million after spending last year as the backup for the year in San Francisco. So we'll talk about the trade-up and what that possibly means in terms of the draft capital, the Texans trade, in a minute. But from your perspective, of the quarterbacks they were going to add as a potential replacement for Kirk Cousins, why do you think they went for Sam Darnold?
I think in this organization, the quarterback guru is Kevin O'Connell, and Kevin O'Connell has known Sam Darnold actually since high school, when Darnold went to one of those Elite 11 events, and O'Connell was mm-hmm. one of the coaches there. He had recently stopped playing. It was like 2011. And so they actually met then, and he followed his career. He was enamored, like everybody else, with all the athletic and throwing skills that Sam displayed in college, and ended up being the reason he was a top draft pick. And, he is a pretty good quarterback coach. And I think he and other people, including Josh McCown, who is Sam Darnold's former teammate and now the Vikings quarterbacks coach, feel like the story isn't done. It hasn't been fully written on Darnold's career, that he was a bust in New York. It didn't work out in Carolina, but there's a lot more there. And so that's why I think they targeted him. And I don't think they were the only team. I think one of the reasons the money got to $10 million was that the Broncos and who knows who else were also involved, and they had to make sure that they got the deal done. And so, and that's not a cheap contract for someone who basically didn't play last year. I think from Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's perspective, he views Darnold, I don't want to say as a hedge against not being able to draft somebody, but young enough and with enough potential that if they somehow come out of this offseason without their quarterback of the future, that he would at least be somebody they could spend the season evaluating as and finding out, well, maybe we stumbled onto somebody who could. And so I don't see that as being the likely scenario, but I think that was probably part of Kwesi's analysis mm-hmm. of it. But ultimately, the quarterback decisions in terms of personnel evaluation and selections, I think rest fairly with the head coach, and he was a big fan and has been a big fan.
Mm-hmm. And certainly there's a lot of supporters for Sam Darnold out there. I mean, Kyle Shanahan brought him in last year with guaranteed money. The Vikings, I think, doubled the guaranteed money, or practically guaranteed money, that's going to Sam Darnold on this deal, even though didn't really play much last year. The Panthers traded significant draft capital for him a couple years ago. I mean, we can sit here on the outside and talk about how the results have not been there. And I don't think anyone's being rude in suggesting that Sam Darnold has not been an NFL caliber quarterback, but there's definitely supporters here in the NFL. Now, here's where it gets confusing for me. I might not like Sam Darnold. I might not think he's the right decision, but I can understand why somebody else would. Then the Vikings trade up. They make a deal with the Texans, send a couple second round picks, one this year, one next year. They move into the first round for a second selection. They have 11 and 23, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So they have 11 now and 23. Speculation, I think, understandably so, is that they are trying to move up for a quarterback. But no trade happens otherwise. They still have 11 and 23. There's still other teams competing for presumably the quarterbacks outside of the top three. I know the math might say that the Vikings could get close to the top three or in the top three if they had a little more to make this deal work. We don't know if that's even something the top three teams are willing to consider. The Cardinals are at four. The Chargers are at five. They could be in the trade market. There's lots of possibilities here. But as it stands, the Vikings have now traded up for a second first-round pick with no guarantee they're going to be able to get J.J. McCarthy. So, Kevin, now I come to you. I guess a two-part question here. Number one, do you think, or do you know, maybe, I wish you would know because that would make things a lot easier. What are your thoughts on the possibility that the Vikings are trading up for a quarterback? And then I guess my second question is, do you think they have to make another move to get that quarterback if that's the choice?
Yeah, they are 100% hoping to be able to do that. There's no doubt in my mind. Like, after saying all we just said about Sam Darnold, I think in reality, the reason he's here is because they're hoping he's good enough that whoever they draft, that he can play well enough that they are not forced to put whoever they draft onto the field until they decide that player is ready. And that there is value in that. And I think Kevin O'Connell puts a lot of value in the idea of you could ruin a player's career by putting him out there too early. So if you ask why are they spending $10 million on Sam Darnold, the number one reason is as protection for whoever they end up drafting. And I do think there's a 100% chance that they want 100% likelihood that they want to trade up. And I do think, and they have backed themselves into a corner by letting Kirk Cousins go without having his replacement already on hand. And I don't think that they don't want Sam Darnold to be the replacement. Maybe he surprises everybody. And they're definitely trying to do that. But they have backed themselves into a corner where it has to be now. And they're in a situation where, as you said, no matter what they might offer to a top three, one of those top three teams might not be enough. If those teams fall in love with one of the top three quarterbacks and decide we can't leave this draft without one of them. Mm-hmm. So what that trade does in my mind is it makes it pretty likely they're going to get one of the top four quarterbacks. It gives them enough firepower to get, and maybe they'll have to add because they've sort of telegraphed it in a way that allow teams to extract more, even more value than otherwise they would have. But I think that means that they've decided they at the very least have to get one of the top four, and maybe the top five. I don't know, but either way, they know they can't sit there and wait at number 11 for one of those guys, and so they felt like they had to at least start that process, and they found a deal that they thought did it because it's a quarterback involved. I don't think there is. Worried about giving up excess value on the numbers and the picks, because if they're not able to do this, they will have. I mean, it'll be in my mind a catastrophic failure of team building to come out of this offseason without Kirk Cousins and without his long term replacement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I could see the logic in trading up, and you're absolutely correct in that. I think. You see more and more teams now when you talk to them, they're certainly more comfortable with the idea of not throwing the trade chart out the window, but at least being more aggressive with their trade chart if it's a quarterback they're moving up to grab. The part that I find so interesting about this, though, is it feels like it's half done, right? Yeah. It feels like they make this trade, they give up draft capital to move up, that's the reality of the league. You're going to have to give up, some draft capital to move up, and I don't think Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, who I think built the draft chart for the Niners years ago, is naive to that reality. But the Vikings didn't send that capital instead to the team they're presumably trading up for, who if you assume they're using a similar chart to what the Texans were using, they would want that draft capital because it's worth more than the first round pick. And if a team specifically told them, hey, we want a first round pick to do this deal, it also seems a little surprising that the Vikings would make that move, not knowing that they can move up. And so I think if they are able to move up for a quarterback, no big deal. You did it in two parts. Nobody cares. You got the quarterback in the long run. But you sort of run this unique or interesting scenario where you give up draft capital knowing, okay, we're moving up for a quarterback, but then you don't get the rest of the trade done and you don't get that quarterback. So are you surprised that they're sort of telegraphing this move the way they have and, you know, sort of making half the trade but not finishing up with the other half of the trade?
I mean, a possible explanation is that they know what it's likely going to take to get to four, but they want to see if, and maybe they have some intel to suggest that at number three, the Patriots, say there's only two quarterbacks the Patriots like out of the top, whatever you think the top three are. And if the Patriots get to number three and neither one of their guys is there, maybe that's the scenario in which they'd be willing to make a deal with the Vikings, and the Vikings know what they would need. But I can't keep getting, like, the image I have in my head is of like an auction, and like everybody, there's a really popular item and everybody in the front is holding up their numbers, you know, and raising the level, and there's just a guy in the back just holding it, his little number up, and he's not even putting his arm down, he's just holding it up the whole time, just driving it up, waiting until everyone else puts it down. And the Vikings are in a position, they're not as rich as that guy probably is in terms of draft capital, but that's, I think, is part of their attitude. Like, they're just gonna have to outbid everyone, and if it means that they, you know, the Patriots don't trade at three and so they have to trade with the Cardinals at four, like that's going to be a fun day for the Cardinals, you know, because they're going to be able to, you know, and that might end up being what it is. And it goes back to, if it's for a quarterback, you know, we don't add up the numbers the same way as if it's for another position. And so, I mean, the number four quarterback might end up getting more, having more draft capital used to get him than the number one quarterback. You know, that mm-hmm. would be wild. I don't know if that would happen or not. But it's something to think about, and that's the image I have in my head. I'm not saying that they're going to be drunken sailors and just offering, you know, multiple drafts, you know, to total drafts to get a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what I think the position that they're in. Like they under no circumstances of that would lead them to hope that they're going to have long careers in Minnesota. Can they come out of this draft without one of those guys? And so. I mean, take that for what you will in terms of how they'll approach it. But my guess is that they have this was not a blind trade. They have at least an idea of what it's going to take at three and four, and maybe even two for that matter. But for various reasons, most likely related to those teams, the possibility that those teams might want to draft somebody and won't know until their time on the clock comes up. They haven't done the second part yet.
Yeah, that's what makes this so fascinating, because I think in a vacuum, as someone who does not work for a team, does not want to work for a team, this feels really simple. It's easy, right? You know, this feeling of like, okay, we'll do what the draft chart says and we'll make this move in one fell swoop and we'll get it done. It's easy for me to say, but so much is riding on this move, not just in terms of the 2024 Minnesota Vikings, but, you know, you don't want to say Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell could get fired if they don't land this quarterback and Sam Darnold's disappointing, but it does sort of feel like a lot is riding on them sort of maneuvering through this situation and landing, having a plan at least that makes sense by the end of this cycle, whether it is JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, Sam Darnold succeeding. It feels like, even though, you know, the first 2 years have not been terrible. You win a division title, you get a home playoff game. Last year, obviously competitive, even though you lose Kirk Cousins for half the year. It's not like this has been a bad football team, but this sort of transition, because it's not as cut and dry as so many other NFL transitions where, you know, you have a guy, he gets old, he stinks, you get rid of him, maybe you're bad for a couple of years and you rebuild. It feels like they're sort of trying to do this on the fly while still being a competitive team. And that's such a unique situation. Maybe not if you're the Packers, but for most of the teams, a unique situation where it feels like this is such a high wire act, and there's so much writing on what happens over the next 2 months and into the 2024 season.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Absolutely. I mean, and some of this has been by choice, and some of it's just been bad timing. Like, these guys, Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell, came to Minnesota in 2022, and they knew they had a quarterback who was getting older, and they needed to make a contract decision on him. But look at that 22 draft class of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kenny Pickett was the only guy taken in the first round, and he's moved on, and like, it's one of the worst quarterback classes ever. So they get hired into one of the worst quarterback classes ever, and then they have an unexpectedly good season that first year, which knocks them out of draft position to be able to draft a quarterback in year two. So even if they had come in with great intentions of starting at quarterback at the start of their tenure, like a lot of teams do, and building around that guy, they couldn't do it. And so it's become crunch time, in part because of the commitments they made to Kirk, and their unwillingness to just, you know, cut bait and have some rough years without him. But also because they really haven't been in position being at number 11 isn't great position, but they haven't ever been in anything close to a position like this in the previous 2 years.
Yeah. And they were in rough cap shape. The prior regime, which didn't do a bad job by any means, but by the end, they were sort of in a difficult situation, and they're almost victims of their own success, right? Like that first year, if Kirk got hurt in 2022 and they had that they'd won 7-8 games and they hadn't been a playoff team, maybe they are more aggressive last year. Maybe it is a different path, a different sort of circumstances, and it goes differently, but it is a really unique situation. Now, one way the Vikings could add that draft capital, maybe interest a team in the top four, would be if they included Justin Jefferson in a trade. And there have been, let's say, circles of the internet, without getting more specific, who have been very adamant that Justin Jefferson should be considered for a trade, or that the Vikings and Justin Jefferson situation might lead towards a trade. Without getting into whether the Vikings should trade Justin Jefferson, from your perspective, do you think that is a realistic possibility, if not likely, at least a realistic possibility, that the Vikings would consider trading Justin Jefferson as opposed to giving him an extension this offseason if it meant landing one of those quarterbacks at the top of the draft?
No, and I think that the Texans trade got them close enough that they could do it with another draft pick and not have to get rid of Justin Jefferson. The only way that, I mean, unless something changed like in the past week or so, or 10 days, and Kirk Cousins leaving, I suppose, is part of it. But the only way I see the Vikings being willing to trade him is if he basically says, I'm never signing with you. You know, I'm going to play out my rookie deal. If you want to franchise me, franchise me. Go ahead. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like what you're doing at quarterback. I want out. And that's the only way. And to my knowledge, that's nothing like that of the sort has happened. I certainly don't think the Vikings would voluntarily choose to part ways with him. I mean, he's a 25-year-old who is off to arguably the best start of a career of any receiver in the history of the league. You know, a Hall of Fame very early, but a Hall of Fame track. There have been other players, you know, Michael Thomas comes to mind, who also started off their careers in Hall of Fame tracks and get derailed by injuries or other things. And so we can't call him a Hall of Fame guy, but like, if you're building a team, if you're trying to build a Super Bowl winning team, like giving up or trading to get more assets, one of the best players in the entire league at an age where he should still have multiple more years in his prime. And even on the other side of his prime will still be, should still be very productive. Just, I don't think that they view that as smart team building. And so, you know, as you said, like keeping our own opinion out of it, like to the best that I can ascertain, they don't think that's smart team building and are not looking to do it and would only probably do it as if he demanded it and follow through on consequences if they don't.
Yeah. It would be fun for us, be good content. I'll be
Yeah. And I get why people think it, because, you know, they don't know who the quarterback is. You know, at the very least, we don't know who their quarterback is going to be long-term. So that seems like an important thing for a receiver like Justin Jefferson to know before he commits anywhere. He's obviously looking for a deal that's more than just making him the highest paid receiver in the NFL, because if that were the case, they would have gotten a deal done already. So there's definitely, it's definitely a complicated set of terms that they're going back and forth on. And, you know, he did have the injury last year that cost him, you know, almost, you know, I think it was 7 games. And so, though I get why people are thinking that, it's not it's not a terrible place for your brain to go, but just in terms of where I think the Vikings sit on it, I don't think they want to do that at all.
And I don't blame them for not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not like he's a player in his 30s where he's past his peak. He's going to be a key part of that offense and with that quarterback for years to come. So would be surprised, I will say at the very least, if they traded Justin Jefferson. Although I'll tell you what, I saw the Giants sign Odell Beckham to an extension. I saw Dave Gettleman say, why would we sign Odell to trade him? And then they traded him. So anything is possible.
Yeah, that's happened many times here too. We've seen Randy Moss get traded. We've seen Percy Harvin get traded. We've seen other players moved on at times when we didn't think that that was going to happen, and when the public statements from the team was very much similar to the way the Vikings' public statements are for Justin Jefferson right now in terms of their lack of intention to move him. And so we've seen this movie play out before. But at this time, it's just hard to find any evidence that it's something that they would be thinking about. Stephon Diggs is another one. But you probably could have predicted that a little bit more than some of the others. And so I at this moment, it's just hard to see that happening.
Yeah. And maybe if they'd spent money on a wide receiver, that would make you feel more like they were inclined to move Justin Jefferson. But of course, they have Jordan Addison, they have TJ Hawkinson when he comes back from injury, so no need to. But they did not spend a lot of money on, in fact, the entire offense this offseason. You bring in Darnold, and that is, you know, $10 million, but by quarterback standard, not that much. They cut Alexander Mattison, they sign Aaron Jones to a one-year deal, they bring in Trent Sherfield as maybe the KJ Osborne replacement. But most of the efforts and most of the money they've committed this offseason has been on the defensive side of the ball, where you lose Daniel Hunter, you bring in Jonathan Greener to replace him from the Texans. Blake Cashman also joins at linebacker from the Texans, presumably to play next to Ivan Pace. And then Andrew Van Ginkle comes in as a potential off-ball linebacker, potential secondary pass rusher after impressing with the Dolphins. So again, from your perspective, surprised that they focus so much of their investing on the defensive side of the ball, especially given that they might be starting Darnold or a rookie quarterback in 2024? Or does that sort of make sense given what they were losing in terms of Hunter on that side of the football?
Yeah, it made sense. Even if they had kept Daniel Hunter, they finished last year. They had a weird year on defense last year. It started off very poorly with Brian Flores.
Yes.
They made some adjustments, and they go on this like 10-ish week stretch where they're playing as well as any defense in the league.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And mostly scheme driven, and moving players to positions where they could be at their best. And then they started having some injuries, and some of the second team and third team guys started getting more playing time, and then it all just collapsed. And you saw how, shaky their depth was and how shaky their overall talent pool was. And so, I think Kwesi even said it right after the season. Brian Flores did not go there publicly, but he has eyes. He can see, they needed a significant talent infusion on defense to compete, not to be like a top five defense, but to compete over a 17 game season. And so they not only parted ways with Danielle Hunter, but they let DJ Wonnum, their other pass rusher, leave, who had 8 sacks last year. And then they use that money to get people that make a lot of sense in the type of defense Flores uses. Blake Cashman's great in coverage and up at the line, and so you can use him in a lot of different ways. Grenard is a guy that probably is still ascending. He had his best year of his career last year in a contract year, but probably has more room to grow even. And Andrew Van Ginkel played well in Brian Flores' scheme in Miami when they were both down there. And so these are three guys that Flores very much has an idea of how to deploy. And I think that they'll go a long way to sort of spreading out that talent gap. They still have, a ways to go though at defensive line and in the secondary as well. But those are three really versatile, important players that they needed to do, not to to make themselves any better than they were last year, but to prevent some of the failures they were having when they would lose a player for injury or some of their depth had to get on the field.
Yeah. And I guess I want to finish from in sort of the big picture from your perspective. Let's say they do go get JJ McCarthy without having to give up players on their roster. Let's say they make no more major additions to the roster over the rest of free agency. Does it feel like, given, or if we assume JJ McCarthy is a decent rookie but not a great rookie, does it still kind of feel like they're in that same window of 8, 9, 10 wins, maybe if everything breaks right, like it did for them in 22, 13 wins if they have like the best, single season close game record ever, but realistically more of that 8, 9, 10 game window? Does it feel like they're sort of still trapped in that unless McCarthy is a lot better than people expect?
Yeah, I actually think if they were to get near 500 or above 500, that would be like an unqualified, slam dunk victory of a season. Like it, in a lot of ways, again, we talk a lot about Darnold, but you're going into a season with Sam Darnold as your starter and 50 some million dollars in dead money on your cap. And you have, you've tried to do more than break even in terms of personnel changes on defense, especially. And you're playing in a pretty dang good division with Detroit and Green Bay both having won a playoff game last year, and Chicago in position to make a big move too, so they could potentially be a better team than they were last year or even in 2022 and not have the record to show for it, just given the context that they have to play in this year. And so to me, and whether, especially if it's JJ McCarthy and you're saying like that's a guy that probably is on the longer end in terms of what he needs to learn and develop in before he's ready to play. And unless you're counting on Sam Darnold playing the season of his life, I think 8 or 9 wins and being in the playoff discussion in December would be at the pretty high end of what you could expect for them if no other moves happen.
Right. And obviously still a lot of free agency to go. And of course, presumably a second trade you would figure to try and move up and get that quarterback in the draft. But a lot still to come with the Vikings. A lot still to come in terms of the kickoff rules. Kevin, as these stories break, as they evolve, where can people check out your coverage of all this stuff?
Yeah, it'll be on ESPN.com on the NFL page, on the Vikings page, and my Twitter. I usually link out to everything at Seifert ESPN. So There's a few ways you can find it.
Yeah. And Kevin does wonderful work. Check that out. And Kevin, of course, thanks so much for coming on the show this week.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much to Kevin Seifert. Does great work for us at ESPN on the Vikings, on all the various officiating and league rule related topics. This is our show for the week. If you want more stuff from me, I was on Around the Horn yesterday, losing to David Dennis Jr. and Mina Kimes. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm on NFL Live tomorrow, or I guess today, as this comes out on Thursday. So NFL Live today, I think at 4 p.m. on ESPN. So check that out, and some Sports Center as well. And then I wrote a column this week on the best fit for 20 of the remaining free agents, 10 of the best free agents available in my opinion, and 10 of the biggest name free agents in my opinion as well. So why they're still out there, why they should be signed, what the market looks like, and who should sign each of these 20 remaining free agents. So check that out before they've all signed somewhere else. Had to remove some players from that list as they were added. Guys like Trent Brown, Mike Williams. Did have Mike Williams going to the Jets, so don't get credit for that one because it was not published before Mike Williams actually signed there. But hope you guys enjoy that, and more audio coming next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show. So thanks so much for listening.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.